A taste of Ireland with Visit Belfast. It's time to uncover Belfast, a city alive with arts, music, festivals and world-class attractions. Visit Belfast.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. I'm Ed Finn, and I'm delighted to be joined this evening by Steve Thornton, the group head of commercial and hockey at the Belfast Giants up here in Belfast, continuing our very interesting Belfast Uncovered series. Steve, wonderful to meet you.
Well, it's great to be here. It's great to have you, and it was great that we got you to a game.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people got into ice hockey. It's an incredible sport up here, isn't it? Sinead was telling me recently that more people watch it than the Ulster rugby, for example, which is kind of something that would resonate with a lot of people around Ireland.
That is true, but there's a caveat to that. We probably play three times as many games as they do. So we've had over 200,000 people in our building in the past watching Belfast Giants games. But we can play up to 70, 75 games over a 32-week period. So it's a lot of games for the guys.
Yeah, I must say, though, it's really, there's a very big American trying to it, of course. I mean, I was in Prague. I saw the Praha Sparta play, and I was in Helsinki. I mean, it's so exciting, and it's fast. And, I mean, it's kind of, I suppose, for people to understand it, there's a lot going on, isn't there?
It's controlled chaos, yeah. it's very much a sport that you want to watch live. You know, it's hard on TV to understand what's going on. So, like, in Belfast, we embrace the circus. So it's not just the on-ice product that we try to put on display. It's all the stuff that happens around it, like the fireworks, the music, the dance cam, the sub cannon, all that kind of stuff. So like when the fans come to the game, whether we win or lose, they have a good time.
Yeah, amazing. Now, you were born in Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada, I mean, 1973.
Yeah.
So how did you end up here in Belfast?
Well, in Canada, you're kind of born with skates on. So my family, my parents immigrated from Sheffield in 69 to Canada. So they didn't really have a background of ice hockey. But when they moved to Canada, it was kind of inevitable that the kids were going to play that as their sport. So I grew up playing it. I got a scholarship to Boston University. I played there, and then I moved on to playing professionally. And the UK was a league, having a British passport, that appealed to me. Like, it was great for work. I got a chance to play for the national team, and it was English-speaking, and I wanted to stay in hockey. So it was a real good opportunity, and Belfast kind of fell onto my lap.
Yeah, and you first came here to play in 2002.
Yep, that's right. I came as a player. It was an unbelievable experience. I came to Belfast after 15 months of being injured with a knee injury, and so I didn't, I didn't know if the season was going to go well. I didn't know if I was going to even be able to make it back. And from when I came at Christmas, we didn't really lose many games, and we went on to win a trophy. So, like, the memories I have of Belfast from that 2002 season, one of the best years that we've had. Like, it was just the fact that I was playing again, the city embraced the Giants, and we won. So it was a great memories for me.
Amazing. Now, I mean, I was around Belfast last week, and I was chatting to a few people that I know involved in different things here, and you're a bit of a legend. I mean, like, there's no doubt. I mean, you're everyone knows your name. You're like a major celebrity up here. No, but you know, you're brilliant. And I mean, I suppose that is something that's very interesting as well. I mean, there's a huge, of course, the fan base is huge. But people, I met a lady at the game the other night. We actually shared a taxi back, and she had the original jersey she wore for the first game. She had signed books, and she's been to every game. I mean, it's amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, we have hardcore fans, and we have fans that have been coming for, like you said, since day one. And the people that sit around them in the stadium are like their extended family now. So they won't miss a game. It's important for their lives, and for us, you know, as the Giants, we really feel like we've made a difference to the city.
Yeah. Now, when you played your first season here, and then you travelled off around Europe, that's very interesting. Could you tell us a little bit about the places you went and how your journey brought you back here again after your exciting European stint?
Well, I mean, we didn't really have much intentions of leaving at the time for the UK, but the league collapsed. It was a Super League back then, so there wasn't really much of a choice. So we ended up moving back to, I think the first place I went was Italy. Played in a ski resort for 2 years and had it in my contract that I wasn't allowed to ski. But it was an unbelievable experience, you know, living in one of the best places in the world, in the Dolomites. Food was great, experience was great. And from there I moved on to Switzerland, which is the place as a hockey player playing in Europe that you really strive to get to. So I got there probably a little bit too late in my career. I was on that downhill slope, I would say. I played for four teams over there, loved every bit of it, moved on to Sweden. And then the you know, as I was in Europe, the Elite League was formed and built its way back up again. And it just opened the door for me to come back and get into coaching.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a very physical sport right now. I mean, you probably pick up, but you had a good few injuries yourself, I guess, did you?
I mean, I did,
you couldn't avoid them, really.
No, I've done both knees, I've done my wrist, you know, concussions. Most hockey players have lost teeth along the way, which I'm the same. So I'm still walking. Which is good, but like it is a very physical sport.
Yeah, I mean, just to give people an idea, just quickly, and we'll go back because I want to chat about you moved back again, of course, to Canada. We'll just chat about that. But just to give people an idea, basically, if you were to explain to somebody, you know, for dummies, ice hockey for dummies, what would you say, you know, are the basic rules and sort of just to...
There are no rules, basically.
So what you said earlier about like organized chaos, basically, is it?
Controlled chaos. On the
so they end. All, yeah. We know that, of course, it's very fast-paced. It's been, I'd call it, kind of compared it to hurling on ice there, because you know, I'm from Cork, and I'm bad hurling county.
And the players, I would say, are like 400-meter runners. So they go onto the ice as a unit of five. They're on for about 30 seconds to a minute. They work as hard as they can to put the puck in the other team net. In the other team's net, and then they look to change, and then the next unit will go out onto the ice. And there's method to the madness, and the coaches are trying to line match like one line against the other team's line. So like the fans won't see this, like all the interactions that are happening with changes and all the intricacies of the detail on the ice. It is controlled chaos, like you said. But the goal is ultimately to put the puck in the net more than the other team.
And to come off in one piece, I guess.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah.
But it is, I mean, that is, it's almost like that is a huge attraction, of course, as well. I mean, it's just the speed, the physicality of it. I mean, when you're watching it, it is so, you're gripped by the whole thing. I mean, I was just mesmerized the other night at the fitness and these guys, like how they can just move around the ice. It's just phenomenal. I guess huge amount of training and physical.
Yeah, a lot of training. Like it's a faster sport on 2 feet. You know, we're proud of that when you come to see us, like we were traveling at pace, but at the same time, because you're traveling at such pace and the guys are in such good shape, you're always at risk of injuries. So the off season, which is generally 4 months, that's for either recovering and building up strength. And then during the 8 months of the season, with the number of games you have, it's just trying to maintain what you built up over the summer and stay as injury free as possible.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Now, I mean, just to go back, so at the end of the 2009 season, you then moved back to Canada with your wife now, and you've three lovely daughters as well.
Yeah.
And so that was another move back to Canada.
You know, we had our third girl born in Belfast, and we were loving life at the time, but it was the Giants were in a position where, you know, the owner was a great guy, but he was year to year, he was coming to the end of his ownership with the club. I just had the third. We'd been living in Europe and moving around, but basically with hockey bags for, you know, 10 years, and I felt it was time to put roots somewhere, you know, like it was just difficult with a family of five at the time. So a good opportunity came up in North America, and we went back thinking I was going home, and very quickly realized that like it wasn't home anymore. You know, I'd been gone more than I'd actually been there. We settled in, we tried to make it work. And during the time that we were over there, the ownership changed hands into the Odyssey Trust, which also owns the facility, which was the right owner. It was probably the only owner the Belfast Giants could have to be successful. And a door opened again, and I jumped at it.
Yeah, amazing. So in 2014, as you said there, they moved under the new ownership. So was it like, was Belfast always kind of calling back to you? There's something about this city, isn't there, that it's an amazing presence here. There's just a friendliness about it. What was it that kept bringing you back, do you think?
It is. It's a real hard place to leave. You know, like I said, we everywhere we went after Belfast, even the first time around 2002, we compared, you know, world-class cities to Belfast, and we always ended up loving Belfast. And it was, whether it was the friendliness of the people or like you could see the growth of the city, like every time I came back, it was like in another place during like the regeneration. And for families, it's just really hard to beat. So we recognized pretty quickly when we had moved back in 2010 that, you know, that Belfast was going to be hard to let go. And if, you know, if pining is the right word for it, for 3 years. Like, it was one of those things, like, I felt like I was doing the right thing, but at the same time, life is short, and when the opportunity came up, we knew that it was the right thing to do to come back.
Yeah, and in your role, of course, as head of hockey operations, head of commercial for the Odyssey Trust, you play an integral role now, not just kind of like in building, recruiting the team, but, you know, you maintain relationships. What is, I mean, you seem to have, you have a lot of responsibility now, don't you?
Spinning a lot of plates, yeah. No, I mean, the team on the ice, like, they've been an easy one to guide this year, and the credit goes to Adam Keefe, our coach this year, who's been fantastic. Not just this year, but every year, he's involved in the recruitment, and he puts a great effort in on like the tactics on the ice, and is a great man manager. So like I'm every year I'm more and more hands off that side of it. I help recruit the team, and I'll be involved obviously in the summer and rebuilding for next year. But then the other side of it is where like it's becoming heavy lifting, because the last 2 years, like, you know, it was difficult being in the business of mass gatherings during a pandemic. So we needed to make sure the business was viable. So, you know, working with partners, maintaining those relationships, and selling tickets, really getting people back through the doors of the arena.
Yeah, I mean, and the arena, for anybody who hasn't been up, I mean, it's incredible now. I mean, not just for the ice hockey. I mean, the W5 there, you've got, there's so much regeneration and rejuvenation going on there as well. It's incredible, the allure of the whole game, right? I mean, do you think Belfast, as a home for the Giants, really, it's something really special, isn't it? And in terms of the success that you're having now, is incredible.
It is, yeah. I mean, the Giants were embraced from day one. I think they came in at the right time, right after the Peace Pact. They didn't discriminate against race, religion, social class, gender. It's an indoor sport during the winter, which also helps. And because of that, the people here have just taken to it. So they love success, you know, they love a winner here, and we've been able to provide that for them over the past 20 plus years, and it's great to be part of it.
Yeah, I mean, was the peace process, that was hugely intertwined with the whole setting up, wasn't it, in a way, of the Belfast Giants? I mean, it kind of went hand in hand with it, didn't it?
It did. You know, we came at the right time. I think that the Millennium Project and the facility was obviously hugely important. You couldn't have a team without the facility, and we need more on the island of Ireland. But the way that it was done, you know, like picking that neutral color and making sure that there was like the in the land of the Giants, everyone is equal, was the tagline, and not discriminating against anybody, and just being a welcoming environment. And I think Belfast was crying out for it. And that's as a blow-in coming to Northern Ireland. It you just felt like the friendliness of people, and partly possibly because of like the troubles and being stained with the troubles over the years, that was almost overtly friendly, like to the taxi cab drivers, to the people you met on the streets, to the folks you would meet in the local bars and restaurants. I have never been anywhere that has had that kind of friendly vibe to it like Belfast has.
Yeah, I think your influence must have trickled down to the whole of Tourism Northern Ireland, because their big motto now that they're ever is embrace a giant spirit.
You know, you definitely works well with us.
So yeah, I think you must have been delighted with that.
We're jumping on the back of that one for sure, yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Steve, that brings us along to your first choice of music this evening. What have you picked for us?
I have picked I Will Wait by Mumford & Sons, and this is, I picked this one because it's the one of the last concerts I saw in the SSE Arena before we shut down, and one of my favorite concerts that we've had in there. It was in the round rather than the stage being at the end, and they just put on an unbelievable performance.
Taste of Ireland with Visit Belfast. It's time to uncover Belfast, a city alive with arts, music, festivals, and world-class attractions. Visit Belfast.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland and our Belfast Uncovered series. Delighted with my guest here tonight, Steve Thornton. Steve, that was a lovely piece of music. Very nice there. The Belfast Giants made history, of course, in 2000, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they did. There was the first hockey team on the island of Ireland, and they entered the UK Super League at the time and immediately started having success, not only on the ice, but like amongst the fan base as well, with the number of people they were attracting.
Yeah, and I mean, I was seeing there like 3 months on the road. They took their home here, like in Belfast. It was December 2000, was it? Which is now the arena.
That's correct. Yeah. So the arena wasn't ready for the start of that season, so they had to spend the first 3 months, like you said, on the road playing games, and then I think there was a story about that first game. Like the owners at the time, They had no idea if there was going to be 100 people that were going to show up to that first game or 7,000 people that were going to show up to the game. And they didn't want empty seats. So they came down to the players at the time, and they started handing out hundreds of tickets for them to give away to people in the streets because they had literally no idea. They didn't have mobile phones back then really either, so it was harder to get in contact with players. And when the tickets went on sale, it was almost an instant sellout for that first game. So it was a scramble to get a hold of the players again, to get them back, to get those tickets to sell them. And from that day, the success has been there. There's been ups and downs, of course, with the league and the Giants, but I feel like we're riding a wave again right now where we've got that big fan base back. We had 7,300 in for a Wednesday night last week where we got a chance to win the cup on the ice. And we've continued that kind of tradition of winning in Belfast, which is just fantastic.
It's amazing, really. I mean, like the sellout opening night, I mean, that kind of captured the hearts of an entire nation, didn't it? I mean, that started the phenomenon. That just kind of remains now.
It really did, yeah. And one of the things that I think ice hockey in particular has that a lot of sports don't is the access to the players. So one of the things that we used to tell, it's been a little bit difficult this year, but what we used to tell the guys is after the game, they're going into the bar and they're celebrating with the fans. So that was the fans really got to know the players. So they'd be mingling after the games, and even though we played the next night, that was I think what probably sunk the hooks into the fans of the Belfast Giants because they got to know them. I do laps sometimes before games, and I still talk to people that will tell me they've only missed single digits amounts of games in the 22 years of the Belfast Giants, you know, they've been there from day one, where they were in a different jersey almost every game. They've got all the years in their cupboard and just hardcore support.
And I was checking out there as well. It was very interesting, the colour, right? That was, you know, because we're all so sensitive about everything, aren't we? And we're getting much better at it all, I suppose. But the teal was actually no mistake because there was a reason for that as well.
There was, yeah. Like, just the affiliation and sectarian amongst sports in Northern Ireland was something that we wanted to avoid early days. You know, if somebody showed up with a football jersey or a Gaelic jersey, we asked them to change it and we put them into a Giants shirt, and that neutral color was
they important. Got lost onto the wrong stadium.
No anthems, no jerseys. Yeah, exactly. So they didn't, like, I mean, early days we had people leaving after two periods thinking it was halftime. So like they didn't know, you know. So it's been a real education over the past 20 years, and I've been lucky to be a part of it. Like in 2002, it was a couple years old, but you could see that it was still very fresh, very early. Like, there wasn't really an understanding of what was happening on the ice. And then 2000, when I came back in 2008, 9, that range, the hardcore fans started to become appreciative of, like, the systems you played and the way you played games and the way you won games. And now, you know, 20 years on, we've got a lot of those fans that have had kids that are playing in the Junior Giants system that really have a good understanding of hockey. So, like, you're having different conversations with fans after the game, like, over the 20 years now.
And, of course, just in terms of the players themselves, I mean, in terms of the makeup and nationality, I mean, you've obviously a huge amount of, because Canada is, the, like, you know, you're born with the ice hockey kind of in your hand, aren't you?
We like to think so, yeah. Although Ireland does have a case to the, they feel they started ice hockey through hurling.
Yes.
So there's a story on that.
Yeah, the Navan Fort.
I think Finland also claim it, Sweden claim it, and so do Canada. So there's a lot of claims on it. But Canada is like a hotbed. Like the high percentage of the top players in the world come from Canada. They're consistently amongst the top Olympic and World Championship teams. So for us, you know, one of the areas that we feel we can get better is by creating our own talent pipeline coming up through the system. But it's so difficult because there is only one permanent rink on the whole island of Ireland. So we need the facilities to be able to develop that talent. These kids, like I lasted one, I'm probably the biggest hockey guy in Northern Ireland. And I lasted 1 year in the Junior Giants with my girls. They played the Junior Giants when we moved back. We did one trip to Scotland. It was a 24-hour trip for a 50-minute game. The boat was rocking so hard that night coming back. I think we arrived at like 5 in the morning on Sunday, 2 hours sleep, and the kids were at school. And I just couldn't do it. Like, it was with the work and with the time of going over. We switched to field hockey for them. And so the dedication that it takes for these Junior Giant parents to help develop these kids to come into our system is immense. So until you get rinks in Dublin and rinks further down south in Cork and Galway, where the Junior Giants can start playing local derbies, games against each other, it's just so hard. But we know that this is an area that we really want to improve on.
Yeah, it's very interesting that, of course, you would have to, I mean, like with the GA, you'd have to be into the schools and you'd have to start at a really young age, of course. Yeah, and so the facilities are vital.
So we've done inline and field and indoor ball hockey camps and stuff like that, but it's not the same. Like skating and stick handling at the same time is an absolute skill, and you got to get them on skates early for them to just to be normal. Like in golf, like if you swing early, it just becomes like your muscle memory, and you need that in ice hockey as well. It's so hard to learn at a late age.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. Yeah. In terms of the sport itself, I mean, as a career, I mean, professional, obviously, does it pay well?
It does, yeah. Like, I mean, in North America, in the top league in the world, there's people on, you know, 10 million plus a year. In Europe, there are $1 million contracts or £1 million contracts in Europe as well. So the top leagues to play in are Switzerland, Sweden, like the countries that have ice hockey as part of their culture. The UK pays well as well, but I think the thing that is our USP, certainly in Belfast, is number one, that we progress people, like so we can progress them on to Europe, to bigger paying roles, but we also educate people. So we've got 7 guys on our team this year studying for a master's degree while they play. So they're leaving in a position where they're better prepared for life after hockey. Plus they're paid well, plus we cover their apartments and cars and give them a really, really nice life in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I mean, an absolute career. I mean, without a doubt, I mean, the big bucks you talk about there, I mean, that's massive stuff,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, well, they wouldn't necessarily be making that kind of money in the UK.
No, I know.
But there is the potential to move on to it. We have guys that they can. We take pride in that. Like, we progress people within our organization, and we like the fact that we're progressing people onto bigger roles in Europe. But, yeah, I think there's big, big money out there in Germany, Sweden, Finland, Russia, used to be. Like, I'm not sure what's going to be next year. And other places as well. So hockey is a professional sport, and guys can make a career out of it because it can end in one hit.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Like, of course.
It's a short career.
Yeah, and of course, you want to try and keep your guys as long as you can, I suppose, because, you know, if they're good, they could easily get snatched away.
That's the biggest dilemma we have as an organization. It's like when we have success, you want to bring that team back, but the team automatically is more expensive, and we have, like, we're ultimately owned by a charity. We have our budgets that are set, and we can't really go above those budgets. So we do what we can to bring a core amount of players back, and then we help players move on, which enhances our reputation in the small hockey community. And then we get that next pipeline of players coming through that we feel have the chance to help contribute to success, but we can also move on if needed.
Yeah, I mean, the mantra is really interesting. I mean, what's coming across, what came across to me when I was there, you know, this incredible equality, and your mantra kind of represents that as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, in the land of the giants, everyone is equal. That was introduced on day one, and I think that it's never more important than it is today. I think in today's world, like, I think we've been there for a while now. We've tried not to discriminate against anybody. Like I said, the race, religion, social class. And at the time, it was really more about, like, a sport that broke the divide. But it's so much wider than that. And we're very proud of that.
And you've been, like, for the last number of months, and you were telling me there earlier, the season goes up to April. Is that correct for people?
That's right, yeah. So we play for 3 trophies over the course of the year. So we've got the league trophy, which is that's the big one that fans like. We're probably the only league in the world where the league trophy is the most important one. And I think that mirrors the Premiership of football. And over the course of the season, we have our version of the FA Cup, which is the Challenge Cup, which we just won last Wednesday. So we've got some silverware in the bank now, which is...
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Serious achievement.
Yeah, it was great. It's great. When you're playing, it's just you're just so excited to win something with the players around you, and you get to celebrate. When you're in my position, it's more of relief that you've got one in the bank, because this team is too good to go home empty-handed. And then the last one is the playoffs, which is from the player's point of view, that's a big one, because you want to win your last game of the year. You want to go into the summer knowing that you were the best team on the last game of the year. So we've got three to play for. The last game we can possibly play is May 1st. And if we win the league, which right now we're in a bit of a 2-horse race with Sheffield, it qualifies us for the Champions League next year. So that's exciting for our fan base as well.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, you're expecting this year, I mean, the highest audience numbers on record. So it's amazing to see how the sport has grown here.
It has. And this year it was difficult to budget for. We didn't know what to predict with, like, the coming out of the pandemic, you know, whether we could even actually have people in the building. So we've managed great numbers even during the Omicron of December, January, where we had like limited capacity, you know, so the October, November were unbelievable. A little bit of a blip in terms of what we can bring in those Christmas months. And then like the last few months have been unbelievable for us. The fans, I think, have been itching to get back and experience the Giants and just do something.
Yeah, it's incredible though how addictive it is, because it just, as I said, the adrenaline. And I hadn't been to a game for a long while, and I'm looking to book the next one. I mean, it's just, it really is a dick. And the fact that you have, you know, the weekends, you have the Friday and Saturday, you can really kind of like have a real bumper-packed weekend.
There's nothing like it. Really, we embrace that circus and we try to create an environment that is fun for everybody. And when we do the double headers, where we have a team coming across for two games, like a Friday and Saturday, they generally come to Belfast for a night out. The fans do. Like, they love coming here as their road trip. So we try to get one for each team over the course of the year, and they'll bring 200-400 fans. But they're together in the audience. They're together, like in the bar after the game. They go out together. There's no undercurrent, you know, of violence in any way, shape, or form. Even though on the ice, like, there's a lot of...
No, the only violence was trying to get a taxi back into town afterwards, Steve.
It was a short walk.
Fisticuffs there with a few people. But that's another day's work.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I must say as well, by the way, the whole American experience, just a complete trivia. The nachos that I had the other night, right, this sounds true, they were the best I've ever had. Seriously. And the food here, you know, it's very American. And, you know, as you were saying, the Subway thing and everything. But it was great fun. I mean, it's the real burgers, nachos, you know, the real American type. But really good. I mean, I was, you know, I wasn't kind of expecting that.
Good to hear. It
wasn't just a bag of Doritos.
You would be very happy to hear this. That's good.
It was excellent, excellent. Anyway, see, what have you picked for us for your second choice of music this evening?
The second one will be Ryan McMullen's Belfast City. And the reason I picked this one is it seems to be the unofficial anthem of the Belfast Giants now. I associate it with winning. Every time I see a trophy being lifted, that seems to be the music in the background. When the players are coming out on the ice, that's music that has been playing in the building. So, you know, it's great memories for me when I hear it, and I think our fans love it as well.
I'll be on my way, leaving West LA at sunrise.
A Taste of Ireland with Visit Belfast. It's time to uncover Belfast, a city alive with arts, music, festivals, and world-class attractions. Visit Belfast.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine, 106.8. Sunshine, 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland with my special guest this evening, Steve Thornton, continuing our Belfast Uncovered series. I'm really enjoying our chat, our giant chat this evening, Steve. It's really fabulous. What I was going to ask you there was, for yourself, life in Belfast for you now, what do you love about Northern Ireland and Ireland, I suppose, overall?
The things that I missed and that I love the most is the fact that, like, I live in about 7 minutes outside of the city centre in Ballyhackmore, you know, a leafy tree-lined street. At the doorstep, you've got everything you need, like, you know, in 15 minutes of walking down Upper Newtownards Road. It takes 10 minutes to get to work. Traffic is not that bad. Three airports in 90 minutes. Incredible food destinations if you wanted to, three Michelin star restaurants. The nightlife is absolute top drawer. I love the fact that I can walk into, whether it's the Cathedral Quarter or Horatio Todd's at the end of my street, and there'll be 18 to 20 year olds in there, there'll be 30 year olds in there, and there'll be 70 year olds in there. And it's just a friendly spot. And then all the National Trust's, you know, walks and beach walks and the scenery that you'd have, like castles that you just don't get in North America, within about 90 minutes or an hour. Like, it's just incredible.
Yeah, but that is, I mean, of course, that is the thing about the relationship. Canada has a major, I mean, there's been so many Irish, I suppose, gone there during recession, and there's a huge relationship between the two countries. But that is, of course, you don't have that wonderful, that, like, the Navan Fort 5 or 6,000 years old.
No, you don't.
Obviously, it's a different scenario.
And you don't have the walkability in the middle of winter when it's minus 40, or even when in the middle of the summer when it's plus 40 with humidity. You know, like, we're here. Yes, you get the liquid sunshine every now and then, but you have you can play golf 12 months of the year. You know, it's a great spot.
Yeah, and I mean, for it's interesting that you say there, because a lot of people, you know, I suppose, would have perceptions about the North and Belfast. And it's so interesting to hear you talking about your first-hand experience with your girls here. And, you know, the just the fact that you found this to be one of the best places, safety. It's great to hear that, you know, because it really, I think, shows people, you know, the stuff you hear in the media a lot of the times and what's reality on the ground is so different, Steve, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And I still recruit for the Giants and conversations early days. That was the first question that came up was, am I safe? Like, is it a safe place to bring my wife or bring my kids? And we very rarely hear it now. You know, like, I think the international reputation of Belfast is gone up significantly. I still think it's a sneaky good city, and I'm not sure you want to tell everybody because it is so good.
I know.
Like, it's got so much going for it. But the players here, like, I tell them, you know, you're gonna come, you're going to have a chance to win silverware, and you're going to have the season of your life. And there's not one player that I've spoken to after that will go against that. Like, I still talk to guys that played here 3, 4, 5 years ago, and they comment on the fact that I told them that, and they still miss it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, have you traveled extensively all around the area here? I mean, of course, you've so many. Everything is an hour and a half away, isn't it? Everything is an hour away. The Giants Causeway is an hour away.
For North American or Canadian, an hour and a half is nothing. So, yeah. When the kids were younger, we made an effort all the time of doing something. So, like, I would, like, on a weekend, like, when in the off season, we would either do a National Trust or we'd do, like, a castle in the North Coast, or we'd go to the Mourne Mountains and, you know, walks along the beach. And as they grow up, you know, school gets in the way a little bit, and then their sports do, you know, like, it's a great sports scene for young kids. I'm a competitive guy and my kids play competitive sports. So that's one of the things I love the most. I love being at the side of the pitch, watching them play field hockey, or at the side of the racetrack, watching them run. And that seems to dominate our lives now. And a lot of the friends that we've created have come from, you know, standing at the side of the pitch and talking. But we love that, and we love how close-knit the community is. Like, it's amazing to see, like, when you go do the school run, you see the grandparents, how many grandparents are picking up their kids, you know, where I think that just says a lot about the tight-knit family units that there are here in Belfast.
Steve, I mean, in terms of your own take on it, why do you think there hasn't been a take-up in Dublin? I know people involved in sports down there. I worked in different places over the years, and there was a lot of efforts made to get a team up and running. It just, or a stadium, it never seemed to happen.
I honestly don't know. Like, I don't know if there's a stadium shovel ready to convert. I know there was conversations about an arena being built in Liffey Valley. There's investors and people that are looking at converting old warehouses, and I've spoken to quite a few of them. They always come north and try to pick our brain on what would work and why it would work and what are the costs. And we do everything we can to try to support that, because we think that's one of the things, again, that we're missing. Like, if we had a rival that we could play against, that we could take, you know, 2,000 fans to when we play against Dublin or vice versa, it would be incredible. And then from that, that's where the youth development system start to grow. And then from that, that's where other cities across the South may look at putting facilities in, and the sport becomes more mainstream.
Would you see, are there any kind of plans to build another stadium up here?
Well, Dundonald is it's coming to the end of its years. Like, it's probably the nice way of putting it. And there has been a commitment from the council to invest in a new facility. So, it's public knowledge, and the designs are online. And I think in the next 2-3 years, we should have a new Dundonald that is like a 30-40 million plus building that will hopefully attract more people to the ice sports in general. And then we're hoping, fingers crossed, on Dublin.
Yeah. I mean, for people, I suppose, if you were to say to somebody as well, you know, if I wanted to get interested in the game, I mean, I know there's some great sports channels and you can watch, I've watched loads of ice hockey on TV. What would you say to somebody? I mean, obviously, the live thing is fantastic because, you know, you don't get that on TV at all, right? But how does the process start? I mean, is it just, how do you get people excited?
Well, I think you buy a ticket to the Giants is number one. I have to say that. Give up. Yeah. But, you know, we do a lot of stuff in the community, like the school visits, and we send the players out, and that's probably where we start the conversations with them. We try to get to them when they're young, because it's a great sport for young families to come to. There isn't really anything secondary other than the Giants. You can sign up for the Junior Giants, learn to skate. You can play some ball hockey, inline hockey, but it's not the true experience of being at a Giants game.
Yeah, no, of course, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, the fact is, like, it's great because there's a whole, I mean, you can do so much in terms of the weekend. I mean, you were saying earlier about Belfast. I mean, I would see what you were saying there as well before. You love the fact, the location, the mountains, the sea. Again, yeah. It's just a great place in terms of, you know, the weather is good here as well. I mean, it seems to be always sunny when I come up anyway.
Yeah, but, well, it certainly is today.
And in terms of ice hockey, you're indoor anyway. So
this is what I tell the players when I recruit them. Like, it's always sunny at the beginning of the season, always sunny at the end of the season. In the middle of the season, doesn't matter because we're in the arena anyways. It's indoor.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. And then during the summer months, then what do you do yourself, or what do you like to do? Do you travel, or?
Yeah, we do a little bit. It's a short window we have when school ends for the kids that we can get away, because the players, if we make the Champions League, the players will be back in August. We have to have everything ready for when they arrive. So we go back to Canada if we can to see the family. A lot of sports that we have, like with the kids as well. And then, you know, we'll do the odd weekend break. Like if there's a game or a race in Dublin, we'd like to get a night in Dublin, see your beautiful city, and go down south as well, further down to Cork. But yeah, like it's you'd think it's more relaxing in the summer, but it's actually probably more chaotic. Like in the season, you kind of get into a bit of a routine. You have your team, the games happen. We have a great operations team that put it on. The summer is recruiting season, you know, so we're looking at bringing the next group of players in. The phone is buzzing all the time. And then the sponsorship as well, just making sure that we have like the partners back on board to start the season. So it's again,
and of course it's fantastic. I mean, there I was sailing around Belfast Lough the other day, and it was great. This lovely experience you can do following seas was great fun, and right from the Odyssey there. But there's so much. I mean, it was great for bringing people here, isn't it? I mean, it's fantastic. It is, it's a great attraction and a great draw for bringing people from all over Ireland.
It is, yeah. And we've got almost a campus set up right there, like right where the boats are next to the arena. That like there's the ARC apartments, and that's where all of our players live. So like they're all in there. So we've like for the experience that they get while they're here, you know, they're essentially on the water. They're 500 meters from at the furthest from the arena, and they're a short stroll into town as well.
Yeah. So when you want to have an old knockabout now, what do? Are you just you still play?
Oh no, not anymore. I get roped.
You're not
in the
when everyone's gone home. Yeah. You're not able.
You know, the problem for me is like the only knockabout time that you can go and play with the old timers is after public skating ends, which is like 11 or 12 at night, which is like a couple hours past my bedtime these days, unfortunately. No matter what time I go to bed, the kids are up at the same time.
So, good. Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, as I said, I was so interested to the phenomenon of the Belfast Giants. As I said, we talked about the link to the way that it developed, the peace process, you know, everybody. It's really a fantastic story, and it was really lovely to get under the skin of it all with you tonight, Steve.
Well, thank you very much. We're certainly proud as an organization that we've made a difference here in Northern Ireland. Like we've had incredibly positive impacts on so many people's lives, and we aim to do so for many, many years to come.
Brilliant. I love it. What have you chosen for your last piece of music this evening for us?
Last one is a bit of a throwback for me. It's from Achtung Baby, which was the soundtrack of my college years. I think the best song on that one is One by U2.
Steve Thornton, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same?